Welcome back to In Focus with David Coletto. I'm David Coletto. On this episode of In Focus, I'm joined by Federico Hoyos, the former Colombian ambassador to Canada. Mr. Hoyos served as Colombia's ambassador to Canada from November 2018 to March 2020. Prior, he was a member of the House of Representatives in Colombia, serving a four-year term. Most recently, he was a counselor to Colombia's president, Iván Duque, serving the president until last month. I got to know Federico while he was in Ottawa and learned we share many of the same interests. Not only is his home country a powerhouse when it comes to producing world-class road cyclists, but his outlook on politics as a young leader is compelling. We discussed his time in Canada, what it's like being a younger diplomat, and on his perspective of Canada, Canadians, and how we view the world. Now, my chat with Federico Hoyos. Federico, great to see you. Thanks for joining the podcast. First, how are things going in Colombia? How are you?
Baby, it's great to see you. It's great to see an old friend. I'm well, thankfully. I'm back in my hometown, Medellin, which is Colombia's second largest city. Things are complicated here again with this third wave hitting us. Staying at home, trying to work from here with the kids, with the dog. It's a little hectic, but I know we're all struggling. So we're helping each other. And it's really good to see old friends as you and to be connected with Canada again, which is a country I deeply appreciate and I have a profound sense of gratitude with and its people.
Well, let's start there because we got to know each other while you were Colombia's ambassador to Canada, which when I think of, senior diplomats representing a country, you don't often think of someone your age. I think we're about the same age. Late 30s. So I want us to explore a little bit. It's a little bit different than the topics we talk about on this podcast, but I thought, you know, it's so fascinating to me to learn about that experience itself. So maybe you could describe, as in your own words, what it was like being your country's representative here in Canada, in a country that, you know, while we're in the same hemisphere, we are probably not as different as possible, but pretty different places, both from a weather perspective and from a political culture perspective.
No, I know it's cliche to say it, but it really was a big honor. I mean, Canada is a great country, a G7 country, a country which Colombia has great bonds with, not only political, economic, but cultural as well. The short story is that I've been into politics since I was very young. I was a member of the House when I got elected when I was 28. And I you belong into commissions here in Colombia, into constitutional commissions. There are nine of them, and each constitutional commission has a number of topics and a number of ministries it sees and controls. I was a member of the second commission here in Colombia, and the second commission is in charge of security, defense, international trade, and international relations or foreign affairs. So I got this sort of political training in foreign affairs since a very young age. And being 4 years, discussing with the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, with the minister itself, I think it was a good training. Nonetheless, I'm not a career diplomat. I'm a political. I was an appointed political diplomat, which I think it has its strengths too. But I mean, it was curious to be ambassador, being a 30-something old guy with a older diplomatic corps in Ottawa. I have this funny anecdote. Like our first winter ball that I think the prime minister threw, and we make a line and we go and say hi to him and shake his hand and when it was possible back then, back in those times, and have a photo with him. And I remember he said, "I'm not the youngest guy in town anymore. Like you stole it from me." And he was really nice. Every time I saw him, he made a joke about my age. And the other day I was in the Japanese embassy in one of those national days that are so so rigorous. I met with Prime Minister Chrétien, and I saw him, and I said, like, Mr. Prime Minister, it's an honor to meet you. I'm Colombia's ambassador. And he said, like, no way, you're so young. And yeah, I mean, it's a comment I got often. But then, like 10 minutes later, I saw him again, and he told me, you know what? I started into politics when I was 28. So I was in your place once there too. So, I mean, it was amazing. It was an honor, and I really enjoyed my time in Canada.
So what was your approach? Did you have like a, when you got appointed and you said, okay, I've never done this before. I've never, represented my country to another government. Over time, as you got used to the job, did you have a vision, or like, what was your mission statement as you sort of played that role in Ottawa?
My mission statement was to be a closer diplomat to the people. Maybe that's a political vein I have in me. So not only being closer to the Colombian community that lives in Canada, but also being a closer diplomat with people here in Colombia. As you very well know, and you're an expert on this, public opinion has different approaches and needs, and they're more and more demanding with more information available. So people don't really know what does an ambassador do. In fact, I do believe that people have a very, at least in Colombia, I don't know in Canada, but they have a very, not a very good view or opinion on the diplomatic corps. They think that ambassadors are people, men and women, that go abroad, go and study, have a good salary, and have a good 4 years, right? And maybe my mission was to show what an ambassador did and how was my daily life. So like, accountability has always been important for me in public service, always. When I was a congressman, when I served in the president's office, became ambassador. So what I did, two things. First, I sent a monthly letter to the Colombian community that lived in Canada, and it was published on Facebook and Twitter. People shared it, and at least they had a sense of getting to know what the ambassador and the embassy was doing. So that was one thing. And then I did not monthly, but maybe 2 times a month videos on what we were doing at the embassy, and also the other diplomats that worked at the embassy told through videos what were we doing. Culturally wise, politically wise, commercially wise. And then, I mean, Instagram. I posted photos of the visits I made, some of the people I shared meetings with. And I tried not to be very boring, because politics can be very boring sometimes. But I mean, I shared cool things, like when I went to Cirque du Soleil, which is an amazing place in Montreal. We have great coffee buyers in Canada. So the meetings I had with them, I shared the statistics of how many coffee Canadians were drinking and buying. So I tried to put a little fun into it. And then culture and art were big for me as well. I had a very strong focus on art and on culture, did a couple of good events. And I think that was my approach, to be closer with people.
And I think, when I observed you from kind of afar, and I attended the event you did on Botero, which, I had heard of him, but I didn't know much. So it was like you worked really hard to make Colombia relevant to Canadians, right? And I think, I'll just reference a little, we did a little fun polling together. Fun in the sense that, there was no real goal, but just to understand, what do Canadians think of Colombia? What do they know? Yeah. And we won't share like all the details, but as you expected, and I expected, is the challenge that anyone representing your country faces is their stereotypes. And that's true of every country, but the ones that unfortunately people automatically think of are not particularly where you are right now, and the city you were born and represented has, a connotation of being tied to drugs and cartels and violence that has plagued your country's history for many years. But the tale continues, right? And that perception, breaking that perception, and changing those views is, I think, my view, a key role that the ambassador to any country plays, right? And so how did those perceptions, and this is a podcast about public opinion, the perceptions Canadians have about Colombia, did you face them every day in your work? And what, how did that affect, you know, your approach and the choices you were making and trying to either shift them or put attention on other things that were more relevant to the relationship going forward?
Colombia has had a complicated history that has been related to drugs and violence and illegal armed groups. And I mean, it's painful, and a lot of Colombians take it personally, and I don't judge them. I do understand, because we've heard, I mean, it's been hard for many decades here, but my approach is to just accept things as they are and try to change them by accepting what people understand and perceive. And I mean, I love the term public opinion, and I think that's why I did such a great friendship with you, because we're interested in this very political concept of what public opinion is. You know that Lincoln used to say that if you control public opinion, you can control anything. I would respectfully rephrase him by saying that if you understand public opinion, you can make better, you can take better decisions. And to make this, I spoke to you once and I say, hey Dave, we were, I think, grabbing a beer or something in the Westin in Ottawa, if I'm not mistaken. And why don't you help me understand what Canadians are thinking about Colombia? And then maybe you can share some of the results. But what I basically remember were three things. A lot of Canadians didn't know a thing about Colombia. And those who knew something, they said drugs, nice beaches, like good tourism, and maybe Pablo Escobar. I think those would be maybe the four things, if I'm not mistaken. So I really wanted to understand that and to make decisions from there. And then I think I do believe in deeply is the importance, the strength, and the depth of Colombian art, and of how artists here in Colombia are really something else. So that was something I wanted to show. And I mean, like, take the cliches away. Colombia is more than just beaches or yeah, good tourism. There's much more from it. We have a great entrepreneurial sector here. We have a great cultural and artistic sector here. And that's what I wanted to show.
I'll just add, you also produce some of the best road cyclists in the world, which is a...
Oh, yeah. You're right. You know,
Tour de France winners, Giro winners. lots of good there too. So
I gave an interview on it, on not being an expert as you, but I gave an interview on cycling, why it was fun to come and cycle here in Colombia.
So that's so interesting. Maybe you could give us a quick update. You know, I think you're right. We in Canada spend a lot of time. We believe we are more globally aware than maybe we think Americans are, right? We certainly follow closely what's going on in the United States, but I don't think we have much sense about what's going on, you know, even within our own hemisphere outside of North America. Even in like Mexico, I think most Canadians don't know very much about what's happening in one of our largest trading partners, you know, not too far away, even though many Canadians spend quite a bit of time there, or they did before COVID. So maybe you could, you know, you also, so when you were done being ambassador to Canada, you served as a senior advisor, counselor to the president of Colombia. So you were at, you know, you were as close to the center of what was going on and seeing it firsthand at a time that's probably scary and challenging. Give us an update of what's happening, you know, in Colombia, around South America, not just COVID, but I know, you know, Venezuela is your neighbor and there's big challenges with migration and refugees. What are the things that worry you the most? And then what are the things that keep you most optimistic about the future of your country and the region?
Well, so something that I saw and shocked me when I was back in Canada is how maybe Canadian politics and maybe public opinion as well are very interested in what goes on in Asia or what goes on in the Middle East. And maybe there's more interest into it. But then I can, it's hard for me to understand, even though I try, and I'll keep trying for the rest of my career, to make North America more aware of what's going on in the southern part of the hemisphere, in Latin America. I mean, there's so many things that that unites us. I mean, religion is one, which is not only about religion, but this is also about a way we understand the world. I mean, there's a philosophical background to it that we share, a Western philosophical values that we share. The food that we eat is not as different. You have better oysters than we do. and we
might
better
have fruit.
Better coffee. Better
you have fruit, coffee better, and fruit.
Better coffee. But I mean, you drink it as well and you enjoy it as well. I mean, it's not awkward to eat oysters for us or for you guys to eat some kind of fruit. So, I mean, there's so much that unites us and can unite us much more, but we need to understand each other. We need to understand each other. And I do believe that South America and specifically Colombia is not well understood and there might not be a lot of interest into it. And I do also believe that Canada loses protagonism with the United States, of course. I mean, it's not a big discovery what I'm saying, but I do believe that Colombians should be more in love with Canada because I think it's a country to really fall in love with and those who are people. And we need to work on it and keep working on it. And I think culture is it's like the best thing that can really bring us together. Then on what's going on in the region, and I have to say this as well, David, I mean, the Venezuela situation is the worst humanitarian crisis the world is living in right now. And I have to say it, and I said it many times when I was an ambassador in Canada. Canada has been a strong, steady ally and supporter of us in bringing back democracy in Venezuela. And I do admire and respect the liberal government's approach with this situation. Canada has helped make it a little more visible world in the rest of the world. But then it's not only about COVID or only about Venezuela. I think we really need to focus on something which is poverty and inequality. I mean, Colombia has places that can be as similar as to Toronto, downtown Toronto, or I mean the nicest suburbs. But we have places that can be close to what's going in the poorest places in Africa. It's a country of contradictions. It's a country of contrast. But not only Colombia, but Latin America as well. I mean, we have parts that are close to Denmark and parts that are close to Nigeria, not being, don't meaning to be, to make a general view of Nigeria, it's complex and it's hard. But I mean, I think poverty is really what we should be focusing on more than many other things. And we need to put this back on the agenda. And I think that just to end this statement is, I think someone in the world who's helping us focus on poverty again is Pope Francis. I think he's a great world leader. I think he's trying to make us focus on what matters again. And I think Canada is doing a great job in Colombia and can still do more in order to fight poverty and bring equality to the country.
I'm curious what you think about, we do some work with a number of mining companies that have sites in Latin America. You know, what's the view of Colombians and other people who live in the region about North American, European companies coming in and, you know, I know mining is an example of, is like, there's a lot of conflict there, right? With the environmental, the social aspects, but is that part of the road forward for the region to develop and grow economically to reduce that gap? Or do you have a different vision for like what, you know, you think Colombia need like 20 years from now, right? And let's say Colombia has grown, inequality's down, it's achieved the things you believed it could achieve. What What does that look like, and how did it get there, you think?
Again, citing Lincoln's phrase on public opinion, it's not about what we want it to be, but how it is. And I mean, you and I are from this generation they call millennials, and there's a generation below us that's more critic. And I mean, millennials and Gen Zs and the guys who are coming, they don't have a good view on mining. I mean, we need to understand this. I mean, the data might support that mining is good or whatever, but whatever the strong numbers say, young people have a strong stance towards mining. So it's either to upgrade the mining sector and make it more transparent to people and understand what the impact is, the bad impacts and the good impacts, because it has both impacts. But really to understand that people want a different approach to economic growth. I worked with miners. I had to deal with mining companies, Canadian mining companies, and I think we had a good relationship. But personally, I don't think that's not what the model of growth we need to have. That's not the sustainable model of growth we need in Colombia. I believe much more in tourism, sustainable tourism. I believe much more in art and culture, much more literature, plastic arts, dance. Music. I believe much more in the possibility that sports can have in this country. And I mean, it's not that it's either culture or mining. You can have both, but I wouldn't focus just on mining as a big economic driver from in Colombia. And I said this to miners back in Canada, and I keep saying it respectfully, is really make us an effort to have a different relationship with young people, and for them to understand what you do, what the impacts are, the good and the bad, and also to understand a very important thing, David, that I have to say. In Colombia, we have lots of illegal mining. Some would call it criminal mining in some aspects, and there is criminal mining, but there are also good, responsible mining companies. And what do you want, illegal mining or legal mining? Then you have to understand what legal mining is doing and what the impact is and how you try to mitigate it and what the social impacts are as well, and how you can make it better. But again, this is part of a conversation that needs to be very, very, very open, very robust, and very candid between mining companies and younger generations.
I want to wrap up our conversation by getting you to reflect on your time in Canada and think about, you know, how you would describe Canadians. I mean, we spend a lot of time on this podcast talking about why people think the way they do, why they act the way they do. We spend a lot of time talking to Canadians about Canadians, but you've had this unique vantage point where you've had to represent your country here. How would you describe Canada and Canadians in a few words?
Let me say maybe three words that come into my mind really quickly when I think of Canadians and Canada. I would say stable. I would say progressive. And I would say polite. Maybe those three words come into my mind. Stable, which is good for a society. It can be sometimes, there's a very gray and short line between stable and boring sometimes. But at the end of the day, I think stable is good for any society and for people. Progressive, I mean, Canada is a country that, I don't know what's in the DNA of it, but you're thinking forward. You're thinking forward. You're more open to change. And I think that's good, because this strange new world we live in demands change. And I think Canada is a country that speaks of change and is open to change. And I mean, not the country, the people, the conversations I have with the people from a very broad spectrum of society, from students to entrepreneurs, to company people, to a regular Uber driver, or someone who was serving a coffee in a coffee shop. Open, an open, progressive kind of mind. And then, I mean, what can I say? Everyone says the same thing, polite. Canadians are polite, Canadians are respectful, Canadians are very aware of each other. I learned to be more open as a human being, as a person, to change. I learned to be more polite as well and to be more aware of others, and also to understand the importance of stability in society. I'm sorry, my kid is crying back
in the back. COVID, it's all good.
Yeah.
It's the reality. So we are polite. I mean, that's where we end up, I guess, always, which I don't think surprises people. But when you've lived your whole life like I have in Canada, you don't necessarily see it because you don't have the contrast. But the stable versus boring, I think, is something that's really, really insightful, because, you know, I think many of us do feel we're kind of, it's in our constitution where we say, you know, good peace, order, and good government is kind of the mantra, versus our neighbors to the south, you know, the pursuit of happiness is what drives them. I think the political cultures do speak to that. Did you have a chance to travel across Canada much? And when you think about Canada, it's a big country, right? Did you notice any subtle differences when you did travel to different parts of the country in terms of how those three things you described might be slightly different depending on what part of the country you're in?
Absolutely. And I thought it was very complex and very fascinating as well. I mean, the difference between someone from Ontario, such as you, so if I'm not mistaken, and the difference between a guy your age and a guy your same age in Quebec. I mean, it was, again, funny, fascinating, interesting, complex to when I went to Tremblant or around, and I went to a supermarket there, to grocery store. I mean, they eat as if they were in Paris. I mean, everything is different. And I mean, a couple of hours away from Ottawa, and the food was different. The customs were different. And you could really notice it. I mean, there were parts where you really felt in Europe being in Canada, and there were parts in Canada where you really felt in North America. I mean, North America, as North American as you can get, a hockey game or a NBA game. By the way, I'm a huge Raptors fan. I felt in love with the Raptors when I was back in Canada. So, and I still follow them. So that's one thing. I mean, the profound differences between those two provinces. Again, we have it here in Colombia as well, with indigenous communities. I made a great friendship with someone there, Jay Olczyk. Jay is an illustrator. He works with this very important scholastic illustrator, Stephen. Feel to remind me, Munchkin. What's his name again?
Robert Munch.
So Jay works with Robert Munch, and he does lots of his illustrations for him, and we became really good friends. And I speak to him lots of hours on the story of indigenous communities back in Canada, and how close and similar the stories are here in Colombia as well. The stories are not that different. But again, many things from the past that has effects on the present. Lots of wounds that need to be taken care of, and very similar from here as well. But Canada is not a homogeneous country. It's not the same. It's not black and white. It's not, it has lots of gray zones. It has lots of differences. It's sort of one of these cakes that you had in when you were young or a kid in birthday parties that have lots of colors inside it. I saw that in Canada, a very diverse country. And I mean, not diverse only because of immigration, but diverse because of its roots and its history, which again, fascinates me. And let me say this, wrapping up as well. A country that I miss deeply. I have my days when I'm a little heartbroken when I think about Canada, but I felt that I was so lucky to be there, and I hope to, I don't know, maybe life one day will bring me up there again. but it's a country that I carry in my heart and I will follow forever on. And we would like to keep on understanding and closing, bringing closer to Colombia, because I do believe again in this possibility of stronger friendship, economic, political, cultural bonds between both of us. And I think this podcast reflects a little bit of this.
Well, those were very nice words that you said of Canadians. Maybe you're too polite, because there's probably a few things that you could say that we're not great at. And I think there are. But your point about, you know, how different even the cultures and the food and the experience of, I live in Ottawa, you lived in Ottawa, we're on the border of Ontario and Quebec. And I don't know if Canadians really appreciate how amazing it is to have within your own country the ability to go and experience such differences, right? And we don't spend enough time exploring our own country, because we kind of feel it's boring and we need to get out of it. So I always like when those that, you know, aren't from here but have experienced it see that. I think it's so important. Well, look, Federico, it's great to see you again. I'm hopeful that things in Colombia, when it comes to COVID and all the other things, improve fast, and you know, we can get back to normal as soon as we can. I haven't been to Colombia. I hope to get there as soon as I can, and it's safe to do so. And I hope to see you again soon. So thanks for taking some time, sharing your experiences, and we'll have you back on the podcast again to talk about, I'm sure, the next adventure you have, because in your short little career, you've done some pretty amazing things. So thank you again.
No, Dave, thanks a lot. It was great speaking to you. I felt as if we were having a cup of coffee in Ottawa with the great Ottawa winter. And thanks for this space. And I hope many Canadians, many friends of yours, are going to be more interested in Colombia after listening to this podcast. That's really what was the purpose of it. So thanks, and please say hi to your family and be safe these days.